This is Colin Power talking about the solution to infinity, and today we're going to be talking about looking into the center of infinity to find out exactly what is there. Sometimes we've talked about calculating the end of an infinite number, and some of the mathematics on some of the end of infinity can be a little bit tricky until we get used to the nuances of base 10, and then we actually find that some of it's quite useful, the vortex codes and all of that stuff, the number 7, and we start to sort of get into a sort of new mathematic there at the end of the infinite. That can be a little bit messy sometimes as well. We sometimes have to kind of feel our way around that a little bit. But one thing that's for sure is that the center of infinity, it gets a little bit cleaner. Yeah, that's right. So the first question really is, what do I mean by the center of infinity? Let's say if I have a point between 0 and 1, and I know that actually there's an infinite number of fractions that can exist between 0 and 1, infinite number of numbers, and all of the whole numbers, they can all exist between 0 and 1. So it's an infinity of infinities. It's a double density infinity, in fact, just in that one space. And so what am I really doing? I've got this like quite dense number space, and into that number space I'm able to fit an infinite number of numbers. Yeah, and so somewhere in the middle of that infinity is going to be the midpoint of infinity. And if I look at the number line, I think, hey, I know where that is. It's going to be the number 0.5. That's going to be the midpoint of infinity. But then what happens is if I look across and I go from 1 and I move up to 2, suddenly the midpoint of infinity becomes the number 1. And then suddenly if I move up to number 3, the midpoint becomes 1.5. If I move up to the number 4, the midpoint becomes 2. We can see what's happening. It's the Aleph 0.5 effect, as we say. You know, as we're moving further and further into infinity, so the midpoint is getting further and further away from us. And so actually, so is the end of infinity. It's moving further and further away from us. Yeah. So what we need to do is we need to zoom in to the 0.5 point and just to sort of see what's there. And the closer we get to it, what we find is that actually, we get to a very strange thing where it's like we get to this, you know, 1 squared, and it's got a square root of one across it. You've got a square of 1, you've got a square root of 2 going across it, and then 0.5, and then you've got the square root is a quarter of that square. Yes, isn't it? 0.5, yeah, squared equals 0.25 is a quarter. So that's where we started to get a little bit confused. Oh, is that quarter thing again, isn't it? Yeah, that's the one, yeah. Transformation of dimensional space, that one. Yes, that's what it is. So all we can say is actually, we can say we've divided the square of 1 into 4, haven't we? Yeah, into 4 quadrants. And those 4 quadrants, each will be the square root of 0.5. So the square root of 1 must exist somewhere between the square root of 2 and the square root of 0.5. But it's a bit of a weird number as to where exactly that exists. Yes, a strange one, that, isn't it? It seems to actually equal 1, but obviously square root of 1 does not equal 1. And we know that. So, and the same as square root of minus 1 doesn't equal 1. But we look at those as they're dimensional functions. So now we understand a little bit about the squaring function. And we talked about a bit of square roots and things like that, and the pattern of square roots and the density there. And we find this, we mentioned about squaring there, and we find the same density expression. So, the question we need to ask then, if we started from, let's say we start with a binary, yeah, a binary code. We've got 0, 1, 0. And what you could say is, in a way, you've just got the 1 in the space of number, which is the 1 in the middle, and you've got 0 to 0 either end. That's the end of the 0 at the beginning, 0 at the end of the number line, if you like. And that 1 in the middle represents a complete set of number space, isn't it? An infinite set of number space. And if you, that's 3 bits, isn't it? Yeah, if you think about it, it's a 0, it's a 1, it's a 0, yeah, in a line. And that gives us 8 variations, and so that makes us small cubes, isn't it, of 8. Yeah, so very good. So 3 bits make a cube. Very good. So all I need to do now is I need to say, okay, let's look in two-dimensional space. If I was to extend now that to, let's say, from 0 now, we've gone from the smallest, which is binary, isn't it? Yeah, we've gone 1, 2, 3, which is, from infinity minus 0 and 1, yeah? So infinity minus 2. And then basically we managed to create a kind of little tiny micro infinity which we're working with. Now we can extend that and say, okay, let's extend it now right the way to infinity. Yeah? And what we find is at the end, it has to be actually the one in the middle has to be an odd number, if you like. The ones, let's say 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1 all the way, they have to be odd number, and the zero has to be an even number. Now, at first, you might say, well, how do I know that? Yeah, well, one was we're talking about the doubling function, weren't we? Yeah, so everything has to be halved of something. Yeah, so and in a sense, what we found there is actually the halving is 0.5, isn't it? Yeah. Which is an odd number, yeah. And so if you double 0.5, you get 1, it's an odd number, yeah. So you see what I'm saying? Odd, odd, yeah. But that is contained within something. 0, yeah. Now think about this. As if I divide a number infinitely, or I multiply a number infinitely, we're going in two different directions, aren't we, yeah? One is going towards the 0, and one is going up to infinity. So, as I divide, we're going to get closer and closer and closer to zero. And as we multiply, we're going to get further and further and further into infinity. And we can see that's the case. That's what's actually happening. As we move towards zero, that actually that's the end of the square root or the halving, even if you think about dividing into two, sorry, it's the end of the halving function, yeah, and it just goes all the way down to there, and like we said, it's not square root, it's the squaring function. So dividing, and then the squaring function, if you get into reciprocal space, you're in the squaring function, you're going to go down towards zero as well. So can you see, whether I'm timesing or whether I'm dividing, it doesn't really matter. As long as, what we're really talking about here, actually, when you wrap your head around it, is whether the two numbers that we're working with are being in the same space or in opposite spaces. If they're both in reciprocal space, we can square them and start to produce or multiply them together, and they will produce smaller numbers. If one of them exists in the whole space, like the number 2, if you're dividing into 2 is a whole number, then it will just drift right the way down to 0. So you're going to go the other way around. So that's how that kind of works. But still, it's quite a curiosity, and it was that phenomena that first drove me to understand the 8 infinities of number line and develop fourth dimensional mathematics based on that concept, or that understanding, shall we say. So, what we're going to say then, if 0 is an even number, 1 is an odd number, and 1 needs to be encapsulated by 0, like we saw with the binary code, 0, 1, 0, we're going to say that infinity is an even number. And actually, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? 0, and then we had 0.9999999999999999 just before the 1, which is an odd number. Isn't it? Yeah, it's an odd number. Yeah, that's right. And so technically speaking, there must be an even number. That means that one particular one must be an even version of one, if you think about it. Just to sort of mess with your mathematical brain there for a second. Maybe that's why we'd ever reach it. You know what I mean? Anyway, that's another story. But anyway, but what we can know, in more of a sense, what we can say is, look, infinity is an even number. And why that is important, if we think about an even number, and we divide it when we look at its center point, yeah, let's say it's going to have a center point, and whether it's an even number or whether it's an odd number will change the type of center point that it has. I mean, are you going to have something which has a center point which is an even number, i.e., or are you going to have one with a center point which is an odd number, let's say, yeah? And so it doesn't actually matter which way round you do it, but we like to say that zero is the positive. And so what happens is that produces a particular type of square. It produces a particular type of square. When we see this, what we can say is we can put a square and divide it into 4, for example, and it will have a cross over that, over the 4. Yeah, we're going to divide it into 4 smaller squares, and there's a 0 point. Yep, it's 0 squared, everybody. That's the one, yeah? And what I can also do is I can put a square at the halfway point so that we have a square, same orientation square, now sat, and its corners will define the center point of all of the other 4 squares, and the corner that define that where all of the other 4 squares join at the center, the 0, will be at the center of that 1. Yep. And that's what we call the 1 squared over the 1. So that's a tapestry of something. It's more than just an anomaly. It's actually something which is saying something about space. You see how, like, the center point is being defined by the corner points of 1 square, and the corners of the, one of the corners out of the 4 for all of the other 4 squares is now defining the center of a square of 1. And that pattern is the pattern that you will see at the center of a number line. Or shall we say a numerical number space. Particularly when we think of something such as the square root of 2. So, let's just have a think about this, right? If I have, let's say I go across 3, yeah? And I can divide the square in half, can't I? Yeah, I can divide the square in half, and I can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then I can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, no, it's a square of 9, isn't it? How does that work? Oh, that's because on one side, it appears that there's slightly less squares than on the other side. And the one that runs up the middle is the one that sort of offsets everything. So I could colour that in a different colour, and now I've got 1, 2, 3 on one side, 1, 2, 3 on the other side, and 1, 2, 3 that run up the diagonal, like a noughts and crosses. And if I extend that again into the next one, which is 4, the situation changes slightly, because in the square of 4, now I've got a 16, you can see what's happened. The centre part now forms a dot, which is where there was once a square with a square of 9, if I overlaid them, yeah. And what we can see is actually that zero line is now being offset, so into half steps. And it's that half step what we're talking about dividing infinity into 2. And so what we can see is if we extrapolate to infinity, that pattern will remain intact. It doesn't matter how large or what numbers you use. At the center of that square will still be the same thing. And as the root 2 runs through the center of the square, that's going to be right bang at the center of root 2. And why we want to know that is because we want to understand root 2 from another perspective other than just this calculative reiteration, the silver mean, yeah? We need another way to understand it. And we can need to understand it through two-dimensional space, which means that we're going to have to go more into fractal geometry. And actually what we see here with that overlaid is what we call the silver mean. Actually, you take the center square and you just rotate that center square within the other square, and you start to create a slightly larger square. The square suddenly clicks into place, doesn't it? If you start to rotate it, it starts to form the circle. And that circle itself has a kind of ratio to the other circle that surrounds the larger square. So we've got these ratio of two circles. And if you can imagine, we can just keep that ratio expanding out infinitely, right the way through infinity, always maintaining that ratio through the uniformity of number space. And so what we're seeing there is that pi function then is really a relationship between that rotation of that square, the very center, which causes that explosion of number space. Now, when we look into fourth dimensional space, what we see is the square actually is reflected in the four parts of zero squared. Zero squared makes the cross, and we've got the four sections of number space. And when we draw the root 2, we actually do create the silver ratio is there. They've got the root 2 is the square at the diagonal, and then we're just rotating that square, and we're going to create the silver mean, and that will actually now will define a square in the center of zero, and a square at the corners, and that can be compressed number space, and each one of those corners can flip out, and so we've still got that correlation between space to space for each one of them, and if you look at the space that they're flipping over, it's actually that arc curvature, and what that arc curvature is, it's like opened up that square root of 2, and we're looking inside of that square root of 2 now. That function is now curved one way over one way with the pi function, and where the pi function is curved underneath on the other way, now there is a gap, and the square that fills that gap just happens to be the same surface area as the two squares that are just reflecting either side. So, in other words, if we're going to take a space between 1 and 0, we can now say that it actually exists in that square, and actually we have another set of number squares which combined will equal the same space, which will be a density, won't it, of, yeah, that's right, aleph 0.5, it's right there in front of your eyes, yeah, in that one corner. But what we realise is now that when we take the whole of number space into account in the fourth dimension, that it's actually reflected in another three locations. Now, we did know that there was obviously a negative space, but obviously mathematics having banned negative square numbers from the axioms of mathematics have lost a large portion of the negative number space. And then there's the other two negative numbers, negative and positive number spaces, which don't actually even appear in the current mathematics we are using. But actually, we can only perform fourth-dimensional mathematics on the whole if we look at the whole space. Otherwise, we're only going to ever work in symmetry, which which is fine, but it doesn't allow us to provide an ordinal system of time-space, yeah, because everything will always happen in symmetry. There'll be no difference between one space or the other. But as soon as we do make a difference, the changes can reflect in the other in various different proportions. And if we offset those differences from a start point, then actually they will converge in a certain way, which will create a certain signature. So only by having those four points can we map, for example, the pi function. You know, we've got these two, the two sets of pi constants that we mentioned previously, and you know those two pi constants can also be mapped onto those two number spaces, and we can then start to work out, you know, more about pi and things like that. So what we're doing is we're introducing the missing numbers. I would like to point out, by the time we get to 0, 3, which is actually the proper three-dimensional space, it gets even more bizarre, because we're only accounting for 2 out of the 8 number spaces. So that means we're actually missing 6 number spaces. Something about the square root of 6 there, don't worry guys. And then basically those numbers are very important, because that's how we calculate fourth dimensional rotation of the hypercube. And so you can imagine, if mathematics doesn't have those numbers, there is no way that it can communicate or even possibly understand fourth dimensional rotation, because it doesn't have the number set, it doesn't have the axioms. And as we've already discussed, because algebra cannot solve infinite equations, it just ends up being infinity equals x, you know, whatever you do. Therefore, we have to use a different system. And that's where we use the ordinal number system, or the ordinal number system of time, and we have to keep track of the spatial cardinal numbers in order to maintain a fourth-dimensional number space intact. So, and that's what our system does, our system of numbers. So there we are, a little bit there on some of the structures of numbers and all that business. So I hope that's cleared things up a little bit. And if there are any more questions, do feel free to drop us a line, and we'll try to answer them as soon as we can. My name's been Colin Power, and this has been a broadcast from Into Infinity, where we've been solving the solutions to some of the most challenging mathematical problems, such as pi, infinity, and even the Riemann hypothesis.